You got a little Ouija with Paddy Power on this one, then?
Yeah, mate. Big man to score any time. I'm backing him.
And it looks like it's the big man who's coming off.
Oh, he's going to struggle to score from the bench, pal.
Oh. Fear not, punter, because with Paddy Power's super sub, your bet carries over to the player coming on.
Y'all ready for this?
So now, all subs are super. Paddy Power. Football, you gotta love it. Valid on selected leagues and markets only. Pre-match and in-play bets on qualifying player outcome selections only. T's and C's and exclusions apply. 18+BeGambleAware.org.
And we're back again in your eardrums for the final From the Horse's Mouth episode of what's been a very busy week this week in terms of racing. We've had a wonderful time in the Rudy, and now we move to the weekend undeterred. And by we, who do I mean? I mean, again, Rory DeLarghi is with me. Rory, I am seeing you more than your children, I think, at this. Or you're seeing me.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you're seeing my children.
Yeah, I have never seen I've seen one of your was it, he walked with a Kylian Mbappe shirt in the background once.
Yeah.
So that's about it. Yeah.
That'll be Charlie.
Thank you. Yeah. So no, I haven't seen your children at all, just to make that very clear. But yes, you're seeing a lot of me. So good on you. Joe, stop shaking your head. Joe Lowe's with us as well. Joe, I haven't seen you as much. How many days in the office are you a week nowadays, Joe?
I try and go in two or three, PK, really. Not going in this week though. I'm down back home in Cork for the week. So just skip the office this week now and be back in next week at some stage.
Swinging it down to Cork. You're down in Cork once a week, I'd say. You love
I know. I haven't been down a long time now since just after Cheltenham, I'd say. It's the last time I was back home. But I might try and stay and maybe go to Clarny over the week, or like, you know, Monday, Tuesday.
Start
maybe.
Sunday, doesn't it? Sunday, yeah, Monday, Tuesday.
That's
what about the big hurling match? Is that in Cork or Limerick on Saturday?
God, I don't know. Should Cork are out really, essentially, aren't they?
I think
it might be in Limerick.
7 o'clock throw in. Yeah, Frank's very keen. He said he's going to watch these double screening. He's watching that and the Eurovision on Saturday night.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, which beautiful segue into, if you haven't checked it out yet at this stage, Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. That's youtube.paddypowerhorseracing, that is. Yeah, you'll get a Eurovision preview on a racing channel. Frank Hickey is part of the panel as well. It's great crack. Myself, Stephen Casson, Frank going through all the markets. I hadn't a clue, but it was great fun. I got to listen to 4 songs beforehand, so I really did my research. About as much as I do for this, to be fair. And I've since, from listening to 4 songs, Switzerland will win the Eurovision, lads. There you go. That's my top tip.
Yeah, I'm not rushing to have a bet there in case you haven't noticed.
Yeah, I have noticed. Why aren't you? Log on. Back Switzerland. I don't know what price they are now. 7-2 they were yesterday. They win. Just a great song by Nemo. Right, back to racing. We are going to look ahead, as I said, to the ITV action. We might have a look elsewhere as well. Loads of racing ongoing this weekend. Obviously, we had plenty of racing at Chester. It was a great week. But now it's to Ascot and Lingfield for the traditional Derby and Oaks trial at Lingfield and the Victoria Cup at Ascot. And we're going to start at Ascot, folks. The first race we're going to look at is, unsurprisingly, the opener. It is the 130. That's the opener on ITV. The 130, which is a 1.5 handicap, in which Kotari is the very, very... Oh, by the way, recording Thursday, 1:15. So first show prices, folks, since the declarations. Kotari for the Moors. Gary and Josh Moore now, co-trainers. 7-2, Jason Watson ride. 6-1, Think First. Neil Mulholland and Neil Callan for the Neils. 7-1, Great Bedwin for Richard Hannon. King of the Plains also sevens. 8-1, Way of Life and 10's Bar. Rory DeLarghi, you have the honour. Race one, please.
That's very kind of you.
Pleasure.
And I am actually looking now at Paddy Power prices. And
well done.
I like the chances of Obsidian Knight at a double figure price, and he's 10-1. You might even get bigger than that on the day. He's drawn a stall 14-14. That tends to put a lot of people off. But again, without trying to sound like a broken record, the outside stall over this track and trip is not a disadvantage at all. Historically, you don't want to be drawn very low. It's possible to win from anywhere, but there has been this bias towards the high numbers, which doesn't tend to be reflected in the betting as it would be at other tracks. And so you've always been able to find a little bit of value with horses who've got a little bit of toe and can race wide. So Obsidian Knight from stall 14. I think stall 14 was runner-up last year and was the winner 2 years ago, or the last times we've had big enough fields to have 14 stalls. So again, just proving with recent results in this race that it's not an issue. But I quite like Obsidian Knight from a handicapping point of view as well. He comes from a a decent little yard. Terry Kent doesn't have many horses in training at the moment. He's had four winners from just 23 runners this season. Obsidian Knight was a winner for him at Chelmsford at the back end of April. King of Fury is a rather unlucky, well, not unlucky, he was second at Yarmouth, his most recent runner as well. So you definitely get value from Terry Kent, who used to be, for those with long memories, he was stable jockey to Julie Cecil when she trained jumpers, which will, I think, a few people will be like, did Julie Cecil train horses? And then it'll be, did Julie Cecil train horses over jumps? She trained a few hurdlers in her time, and Terry Kent was, I think, essentially assistant trainer and jockey at the time. But he's done well with a very small string in the last couple of years. Obsidian Knight has a good record on the all-weather. It's probably considered more of an all-weather horse than a turf horse. But he won off a mark of 73 after a longish break. He'd been off since Sandown in August, bounced back to win at Chelmsford a couple of weeks ago. Didn't get the best of runs through that race. Was very strongly fancied when he went off 7-2, joint favourite in the end, which has surprised me given that he'd been off the track for a fair while. But despite running into a bit of trouble and racing a bit too freely in the race, he's won it in a bunch finish. There's four of them who are quite close at the line. But I thought if you ran the race 10 times, he'd have won it most, you know, 8 or 9 of those 10. I thought he was value for a little bit extra on the day. That will have taken a bit of the fizz out of him. You know, he raced like a fresh horse that day, as he would have been, having been unsighted since the summer. I think he'll come on for it. Although arguably his best form has come on the all-weather, there is this theory that all-weather horses do better at Ascot than they do at a lot of other turf tracks. With the relay turf for whatever reason, I think he will give his running. And having only gone up a pound for that, he's still well handicapped in the pick of his form from last season. He does have good placed form on turf. Last year he was second at Newbury for 1.5 and good at firm ground. Third at York next time out over 76. So off a mark of 74, he's handicapped to win on his turf form, and I think he goes well.
Obsidian Knight. Not to harp back to Julie Cecil. The only Cecils I know are Henry and Jane. So related.
Julie Cecil was Henry Cecil's first wife.
First. Right. Okay. So both of his wives.
So her own right. So she was the one with the racing pedigree. Yeah.
Racing. Okay. Okay. Right. Very good. Right. A man who's not married is Joe Logue, who's going to tip us the winner in the 130.
I was narrowed it down to two, and Obsidian Knight was one of them. But Rory's mentioned it, in fairness, made a good case, and he has shown form on real good form on turf, but just that difference between the turf and the all weather was enough to push me over towards Great Bedwin for Richard Hannon. I did think the handicap was tough, but he's one that's fairly lightly raced for his age. He's only ran 6 times, and look, he's shown form under these conditions, winning in June over this trip and the same ground at Goodwood. And the form isn't too bad either. The second, third, and fourth held their form well into the back end of the summer. But Great Bedwin hasn't been seen since. So I presume he's had a setback. He's been off a pretty long time. But that run I thought was good. I thought he won snug enough. £5 rise is fair. But look, he's just turned 4 as well. So you'd imagine he'd improve a bit more. But yeah, I think the price is fairly fair at the moment. But I would just advise maybe holding fire for a little while, maybe towards when there's more liquidity in the market. If he's one that took a walk in the market at a huge price, then I wouldn't have any interest back in him. But if he was solid enough in and around 10-1, which he is now, or 7s, is he? I'd be happy enough to back him at that price. But if you're looking at the show and he's like 33s, I probably wouldn't interest me just because of that layoff. But the stable are in form. Richard Hannon's horses are running well. So look, you'd hope that he'd have this fella ready to rock here. And if he does, I think he'll go very close off this mark.
7-1 he is at the time recording. Interesting to see which way he goes in the market. Great Bedwin, Obsidian Knight for Rory. On to race number 2 at Ascot. It is a Phillies handicap on the straight course. 4 is the field. First show, Zuzana and Flying Finn are the joint favourites. 13-2 Mother Mary for Safi Osborne, James Ferguson. Topanga is 7-1, 8-1 Rose Prick, and 8-1 for Strong Impact and My Margie as well. So this is a wide open. Joe, you do have one for us in this.
I do indeed. Yeah, Mother Mary. Safi Osborne takes the ride here. Rory gave her a hat tip in the last podcast about how well she's riding. And hopefully she can do a job here for us. Because I think this horse is really interesting. ran well in novice and maidens last year, then went handicapping off 82 and ran well at Pontefract. Was only third that day, but then was plunged into a hot enough listed race at Kempton at the start of the year, the Snowdrop Filly Stakes, and Joseph Bryan won that with Adel East, and was it Schwazier for the Christopher's was fancy that day. And we did this on the pod actually. I like Many Tears as well. I think that race could look good as the season develops, but look, she wasn't disgraced. She did finish 8 of 10, but she's only beaten 4.5 lengths. She goes back handicapping off a mark of 82. She's got a run under her belt already this season and back into calmer waters. And 13-2. Be happy enough to play her at that price.
Mother Mary for Joe. Rory.
Also Mother Mary. I do respect the chances of Susanna, given that Harry Charlton has done very well with a lot of seasonal debutants this year since taking out the license, and she was winner first time out last season and has form here, so I do respect her chance. But I thought Mother Mary was unexposed and would progress again. She did a lot of her racing over shorter trips last season. She's by Zoffany, but there's a bit of stamina on the dam's side of the pedigree. So it's a mixed pedigree. She's related to sprinters. She's related to horses who've won over a mile and a half. And she definitely improved her step up to a mile when third in a strong race at Pontefract in September. That has worked out pretty well. Mexicali Rose, who was second, is now owned by Kevin Blake and was third in a listed race yesterday at Goran. So she, you know, she was actually getting £4 from Mother Mary that day and finished a length of 3/4 in front of her. She's a listed class filly. Then Mother Mary is well handicapped off her current mark. That race threw up a couple of next time out winners in the shape of the fifth and sixth home, Mount King and Telly Red. And I thought that race at Kempton just didn't suit her. I think she was ridden to potentially pick up a bit of black type. Franny Norton was on board and he took the decision on the basis that it looked like there's going to be a lot of pace in that race to take a pull straight out of the stalls and anchor her at the back of the field, with the notion that this could be really strongly run. If we hold her up at the back of the field, we could run through beaten horses and pick up some black type. Didn't work out that way at all. It ended up being very steadily run, and she had no chance from a position. Mother Mary sort of plugged on past a couple of rivals late in the day. She'd only beaten 4 lengths, but she lost that 4 lengths in the first furlong. So I'm more than happy to draw a line through that. Not that it was a terrible run at all. She's on the same mark as she was when third at Pontefract. She handles quicker ground. She was a good second going on well late in the day at Thurston, her previous start. There's improvement to come from Mother Mary. I think she's the likeliest winner of this race.
Mother Mary gets the double vote in the 205 at Ascot. Right, the big one at Ascot on Saturday is the Victoria Cup. I'm fairly confident there'll be some level of extra places. I don't know how many, but there's got to be. It's a wide open handicap. It's head in the market as we record on Thursday afternoon by Mustabshire, who's 13-2 for the Gosdens, Jim Crowley. 8-1 then Popmaster at the top weight, Pearl Dord, and the bottom of the handicap is 8-1. 10-1 the Wizard of Eye, Fantastic Fox. 12s for Ramadan, Merlin the Wizard, who was a disappointment in the Cambridgeshire at the back end of the season. 12-1 for Harry Charlton. And there's Safi Osborne with another chance with Hickory. All right, Rory, a couple of years ago you gave us a winning Tricast in this race, so let's see if we can, and not a trifecta, let's see if we can get first off, let's try and find the winner first, and then we'll get into the exotics after.
Have they cut the maximum field, or are we just getting slightly smaller fields for this? It was 22 last year, 23 this year. Historically
still 29, yeah,
still 29, so we're just not getting the runners for it. We used to end up with 28 runners in this, and the extra numbers do make a difference for the draw here, because when you get a 30 runner field or thereabouts at Ascot, then you end up with horses racing under the standside rail. And when they do over sort of 7 furlongs and a mile, then that tends to produce a bias towards the high drawn horses. For some reason, the stalls tend to be in the center at Ascot. When they don't reach all the way over to the stands rails, jockeys seem to be very reluctant to go to the rail in the early stages of the race. And as a result, races can have more of a tendency to take place down the center of the track. So in terms of the bias here, I would say that it's probably a negative to be drawn very low, which is a slightly off-putting for Hickory. He's got a good record here and would have been in my shortlist in a double-figure draw. But there's plenty of pace up the middle, I thought. And I thought the horses drawn middle to high would have the best of it. It's not quite as strong as it was. When we looked at this race a year or two ago, we had the we had a really nice setup with horses who like to finish strongly and had form at Ascot, really well drawn in high stalls with pace to drag them through the race. That's not necessarily the case this time around, but they're still interesting ones. I ended up coming down on Pearl Door. He's drawn a stall 14 of the 23. Pearl Door is not far away from likely pace angles in Merlin the Wizard and the Wizard of Eye and Caraggio, who are liable to go forward from that block 9 to 12. There should be a little bit of pace from Popmaster's liable to go forward from still 17 as well. So I think Pearl Door ends up with something to aim at. He'd be coming from near the back of the field, but he strikes me as the type of horse to do well at Ascot. His trainer does very well in Ascot handicaps, David O'Mara, and had a good start to the season. I think I would normally associate David O'Mara with hitting his straps later in the season and doing very well in the autumn in the handicaps, or sort of from midsummer onwards. But he's been getting winners earlier this year than normal. Pearl Door was well beaten on his reappearance, but he went without headgear that day. Normally races with a hood. Didn't have a hood last time out. Jamie Spencer on board held up last at Newmarket and just made a little bit of late headway to finish 10th of 15 there in a 7-furlong handicap won by Poet Master. I think he'll improve a lot for that. He was a very good third over course and distance on his penultimate start. That was in the Challenge Cup. And prior to that, he was a winner over 7 furlongs at Newbury in a competitive race. I like to see form at tracks like Newbury and Ascot, good stiff galloping tracks. And if you're a specialist over 7 furlongs over a track like that, then races like this are ideal for you. You couldn't find the jockey riding with more confidence at the moment than Sylvester D'Souza after his Guineas win last weekend. And I thought Pearl Door just seems to have plenty going for him. He's a 5-year-old, but again, if you follow David O'Mara's handicappers, he tends to look after them. They find their form and they tend to keep going very well. So 5 is pretty young for an O'Mara handicapper at this sort of level. And I think you'll see Pearl Door improve his form this season. He should get the race run to suit. And I think stall 14 is going to be a good enough place for him. So he'd nearly be favourite with me. I would fancy Hickory if Hickory was drawn higher, but I think Hickory might just be in the wrong part of the track under Sapphire.
Okay. Pearl Door gets the nod for David Morris, Sylvester Souza. Shout out to Ropey Guest, who turns 21 on Saturday. That's 21 runs at Ascot down that straight course for Ropey Guest, who's been here, done that. And I think about 17 or 18 of them over the 7-furlong trip. So fair play. Go on then, Rory. You've got Pearl Door number 17. Give me 2 more for the TriCast. You can go the next 2 stalls around if you want.
If I was looking for this, I was always tempted to go with Old Bless Him, but I'm not sure he's quite the force of old.
And Jamie Spencer's not riding as well.
So. I'd throw Popmaster in as well. And I suppose Most of Shear's obvious, but he should be thereabouts as well from stall 19.
Perfect. Okay. 17, 1, and 5. Build your exotics around those 3 if you want to do a little tri-cast for the crack at Ascot in the Victoria Cup. Lovely stuff. That was Ascot covered on Saturday. We moved to Lingfield for their traditional Oaks and Derby trials. The first race they're going to show us on Saturday is the 150, which is a handicap over the same distance as those 2 trials. It's a mile, 3.5 furlongs for 4-year-olds and upwards. A Merrick, again, theme of the week has been a lot of fancied horses in these yellow and black colours of Sheikh Obaid, Al Maktoum, butchered that, but anyway, Roger Berry and James Doyle combined, likely favoured for the race, 2 wins last season. Flash Bardot, Jack Shannon, having a good time of things at the moment, possible second favourite round about 4-1, and then you're into Sir Mark Prescott's True Legend, If Not Now, for Rafe Beckett in the unlucky 1000 Guineas colours of Tamfana, and Track of Time on debut for Ian Williams. Right, Joe's taking a nice break here because he doesn't have one for me in this race either, Rory. So the floor is yours again. We'll see you soon, Joe.
Yeah, I wouldn't be going mad about this race, but Merrick is the right favourite on what we saw last season. He's a fairly lightly raced 5-year-old. He won 2 of his 4 starts last season. It was disappointing trying a 1.75 at Newmarket at the July meeting. Otherwise, he was fairly progressive. And he did well to win as well as he did at Beverly on his final start, when beating Perfect Play and Dream Harder. He came from back in the field that day. He was off the pace. The leader that day tried to slow things down in front. That was Omniscient, and then sprint for home. So it wasn't a particularly well run race, and that didn't suit Aymeric, who did well to finish as strongly as he did, because he was having to quicken as the others were, and come clear and beat Perfect Play. So if you give him extra credit for that, he's got a decent chance. What price do you say he is?
5-2 on Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, it's probably going to get shorter than that as well. The horses in these, from this stable and on these corners, tend to get shorter. What price is True Legend?
5-1 on Thursday afternoon.
Right. Well, see, you can make a case for True Legend as well, because as I said, I was just reading that form line where Aymeric won on his final start at Beverly. But very shortly after that, the horse that Aymeric beat, Perfect Play, a length and three quarters, was it? Something like that. I think it was. But Perfect Play then came out in his next race and finished third. So he ran up to form in a Heritage Handicap at Ascot. But he was beaten 5.5 lengths by True Legend. So if you're gonna back Aymeric on the basis of his beating of Perfect Play at Beverly, then you'd have to say that True Legend beating Perfect Play further, yes, Aymeric was better, was maybe value for a little bit further given how the race panned out. True Legend has run to a very similar level in beating Perfect Play around the same sort of time. He disappointed on his final start last season, but he was entitled to maybe find that one race too many. He was pretty solid last season. He won on the all-weather at Newcastle. He also won twice on the turf at Salisbury. So a track like this shouldn't really bother him. And at the differential in price, I'd give True Legend a chance. Sir Mark Prescott is off the mark on turf this season already. Frequently in the old days, Sir Mark might not have a turf runner until July, but he has had a turf winner already. He's not had too many runners on turf. Miss Cynthia was only beaten a neck at Goodwood a week ago. And he is getting winners, not that many. He's only had two winners this season, but the signs are that the horses are well enough. The majority of them are running to form as well. So I'm not massively worried about fitness for True Legend. And I think he might just be the better value of those two for all. They're definitely positives for Aymeric, but I think the market always tends to take that into account with horses in these colours, particularly from the variant stable.
Okay. On a price perspective, for Smart Prescott's True Legend. On to the Oaks trial at 2:25 at Lingfield. Danielle for the Gosdens put in his favourite off the back of a win at Weatherby on the flat, obviously. Treasure, 9-2 for Rafe Beckett. We certainly associate that yard with this particular race and with improving three-year-old fillies. Ruby's a Red was pulled out of the Cheshire Oaks earlier in the week and has been rerouted here. Ryan Moore will ride the maiden 5-1. I don't think her form was particularly franked in that Cheshire Oaks. You Got Me is 5-1, another Beckett runner, and then 8-1 Moulton Rock. Welcome back to the party. Hope you enjoyed your cup of tea. Joe, give us a winner of the Lingfield Oaks trial.
Pretty boring from me, PK, to be honest. We've only 7 runners here, so can't pay anything against the sharp price favourite. So it's either with or against her, and I probably, as much as I don't really want to be with her, I kind of wouldn't like to lay her either. Look, she was impressive last time out at Weatherby, winning on the bridle by 12 lengths, but she went off 4-7, probably should have won as she did, and then steps up in grade now. Look, it's a tougher ask, but the stable do well with this type of horse. I think she's the most likely winner, but I wouldn't be steaming into her either at a sharp price. I think I'd be fairly happy to watch the race and just kind of maybe take a few eye catches going forward and into the season.
You could have kept having your cup of tea there, Joe. Thanks for that. Thanks for coming back in for that. It's like, yeah, I've got one of that, PK. Do you really? Right. That was a strong opinion on Danielle there from Joe. Right, Rory, what do you fancy?
Not an awful lot. The one thing I wanted to say about this race, as I've mentioned at the top of the previous podcast, the going is good to soft in places on the straight course at Lingfield, and good to soft in places on the round course. I think it'll be good to firm, good in places by the time they actually have this race, unless they are sneakily watering, because it's going to be very warm in Surrey, and this ground will be drying out fairly rapidly. So I don't think there'll be any soft places. I think that's a question mark about a lot of these because many of these with form have shown their form in soft and heavy ground, including Danielle, who won easily at Weatherby last time out. I'd have been very sweet in her chances if it wasn't for the fact that the filly who beat her two starts ago at Chelmsford wasn't absolutely tailed in the Pretty Polly at Newmarket last week's Winter Snowfall. I really fancied her chance because I quite like Danielle, but Winter Snowfall just didn't cope with the switch to an undulating turf track next time out. Whereas at least Danielle has proven that she can. She looked very happy at Weatherby, which is a fairly flat track. So your slight concern is away from a flat track on softish ground to an undulating track on what's liable to be quicker ground. That's a bit of a question, but as Joe said, this kind of comes down to whether you like Danielle or whether you don't like Danielle, because there's no which way angle in it for you. So I come down just in Danielle's favour, but again, it wouldn't be. There are plenty of other races to be betting on, including the Swinton Hurdle at Haydock, which we'll come to shortly, which are much more appealing than this.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Okay, no strong opinions in the Oaks trial. The Derby trial, same course and distance, this time of 3 o'clock, Illinois. Is your 9-4 favourite for Aiden, who's got a couple of runners in the race. 11-4 Defiance for Roger Varian. 9-2 the Euphrates, the Euphrates. Definitely not the Euphrates. It's got to be the Euphrates, isn't it? 9-2 7th, that's also for Aiden. 7-1 Arabic Legend. 8-1 Ambient Friendly. And 14's Big Old Field, actually, all the way down to a 66-1 poke for Jane Chapel Himes. That means Rory will tip that one up. All right, the Derby trial. Illinois, the one to beat. But again, we're talking about these Aiden O'Brien horses. And I suppose if you go on the Chester Vaz, which we haven't seen the D stakes at this stage, by the way. It was the second string that ran well, obviously behind the ill-fated winner in the end. So I'll actually go to you, Joe. The jury's out about Aiden horses, is it? Is it?
Yeah, I suppose it is and it isn't. I mean, pick your battles really, PK, I think, and this is probably one that I do actually like Illinois and would look at him as a potential you know, fairly good Epsom Derby horse, but don't think I'd be backing him here. Again, like Rory mentioned for the last race, he's shown all his form on softer ground, winning in October to Curra and then went to Saint-Cloud at the end of last season and was the fancied one that day, although he was beaten by a stablemate, Los Angeles, in that, but then came out and was beaten at a short price in Leopardstown in the Ballysacks this weekend. Like, that was disappointing, I suppose, given that he'd shown form on softer ground and he was beaten previously, but you know, he might be entitled to come on for the run as well. But again, like Rory's saying, that the ground is going to be proper good ground here, and that is, there is that question mark about him. So I've actually looked elsewhere and I thought he'd be a better price than he is, but Defiance for me is the one that stands out. Look, he's by Camelot. And given he's by Camelot, I thought he showed really good form last year as a two-year-old over a mile. He won on debut and then was sixth in the Royal Lodge. Ghost Rider, Al Moose, met Capilet ahead of him. But yeah, look, I don't think I'm breeding that he should be, you know, that good as a two-year-old. Maybe he should, I don't know. But Camelots for me usually improve at age. And I thought he ran a cracker last time, listed race at Epsom. He was held up in the rear and they kind of went again at no pace. And he just wasn't best placed, but he made up a ton of ground and was only beaten less than a length to Bellum Justum. But look, I think he probably should have won if he was closer. Again, there's a finishing speed of 113%, kind of backs that up. Yeah, like I said, I think he's one that should improve with racing. I think he's the most interesting horse here, given that Illinois is probably an Aiden horse I'd look to avoid at the moment.
Fair enough. Ryan and Aiden, two of them, still believe he's better than a stablemate in this race who was ahead of him in that Ballysacks. So that's interesting. Your angle into it, Rory?
No, not a particularly strong angle into it, other than I'm not a big fan of horses coming out of stall one over this course and distance at Lingfield. They do tend to, because the way the track is cambered, it does tend to suit horses. They sort of come a little bit more towards the centre. It's possible to win from stall one, and indeed Aiden won it in 2022 with the United Nations. He was drawn in stall one, but that was a four-runner race. I think in bigger fields it's a little bit harder to come from that sort of position. And that's slightly counts against the favorite here. I thought the horse with the best credentials for a track like this and with quickening ground was Defiance, based on what he did at Epsom last time out. Obviously, his form is coming good to soft and good to firm ground. The vast majority of these either are hard to fancy on paper or have done their racing on softer ground. I thought he was almost the moral winner of the Blue Ribbon Trial at Epsom last time out. Bellum Justum, for quite a big horse, handled the track very well, looked pretty well balanced, and Defiance has come from much further back than ideal and finished with a rattle. I thought it was a very good performance. He was a winner on debut, and I thought he did. I thought he did well in the circumstances, given he lacked the know-how of one or two of his rivals when not beaten far, beaten three and three quarter lengths in the Royal Lodge second time out. That was a really good performance at Epsom. I think he'd step forward from it again, and I think he is the likeliest winner here. With still five, a decent little pitch to come from.
Double vote for Defiance for Roger Varian. There is a Sheikh Ahmed Al Maktoum horse, for those who don't know who he is. He's the yellow colours with the black epaulets, obviously the 1,000 Guineas winning owner this season. The reason I bring him up is, I didn't know this, lads, but I heard it on a different podcast. Do you know there's something interesting about every single... Oh, okay, hang on. I'm playing loose and fast the word interesting here. There is a thread to every single one of the horses he owns. Do you know what that thread is? Yes, I got them both. Every single one of the horses named and owned by Sheikh Ahmed Al Maktoum, seven letters. That was not that interesting, but there you go. I don't know about ever, but if you look in the I don't know how far this goes back, but Bond Racing Post, definitely look in the last 4 or 5 years, every single one, only seven letters.
Yeah, they used to say that about Lady Beaverbrook. All her horses used to have seven letters. I guess it was lucky for her. But obviously, I'm going back to the horse that I think of when you mentioned Sheikh Ahmed is M'Toto.
Yeah, it was a post M'Toto then. Yeah. But it definitely, if you look back the last few years, they all have seven letters.
If you spell it M'Toto and put an EM in front of it, that's easier to pronounce.
Yeah. He's got Maidan here. He's got two A's in it. So he's changing, he adds letters just to fit this weird thing. But it must be a luck thing.
Yeah, you're actually, I'm just looking there as well. You're right, PK.
You're surprised there.
I'm looking back the years trying to catch out, but you're spot on. Yeah, never
trying
noticed
to catch
it.
Me out. Thank you. Yeah, keep going, Joe, and we'll talk about the next race, and you tell me when there is one. It's definitely the last few years, anyway. I haven't gone back that far. Sheikh Ahmed runners, all seven letters. Well, look at that. These are the kind of things you learn on this podcast. The Phillies Group Three.
I would say if you're going to talk about interesting things about horses' names, virtually everything you see running in the Gredley family colours these days are just random foreign versions of previous Douglas horses. Had ambiente friendly instead of user friendly, and there's one running in the next
two friendly
three
two friendly
there's
well that's too friendly but it was are they yeah, all no,
friendly it, obviously environment friends there was user friendly and then there's lots of horses with sort of Wanna Plant a Tree. I think he might have had two horses called Wanna Plant a Tree. But user friendly. It's just like you get ambiente friendly. You got a horse. Again, it's just very rough translations from Spanish or Portuguese into English that are just user friendly in different forms, or environment friends in different forms. So that's quite an interesting one as well.
Those people still listening to this podcast are thinking these lads would be great to go for a pint with. You'd have some crack. You'd have some crack, wouldn't you?
That's why we're sitting here and not in the stag, is it?
It's 100% why we're not in the stag. We're referencing is Tom Nugent, the other presenter of the show, who's on the stag yesterday and Friday, or on Friday, if you're listening to this on Friday, at Chester, and us three losers were not invited. But we're going to tip up winners on Saturday, and the latest winner is going to come in the 3:35 Linkfield. It is the Chartwell Filly Stakes, a Group 3, over 7 furlongs. Remarque has had the wind up for Rafe Beckett and James Doyle. She was operating almost exclusively in Group 1 company last year. She did just a one run in Group 3, but after that, four runs in Group 1 company, including two second place finishes. We talked earlier about a horse who in Danielle is kind of lay or play, Joe, and I think she's the very much lay or play kind of animal in this race.
Yeah, I'd agree, and she's probably one that I'd like to start to keep as well, to keep on side, that is, and yeah, look, I'd be with her. I think she's clear standout on form. She's twice Group 1 placed last season behind Tahir at Ascot and Nashua at Newmarket, and sent off 2-1 favour for the Prix Rothschild in France. And look, she's ended up finishing fourth behind Mas de Savienne, and she went on to beat Via Sestina and was second in Spiral. So look, the form of that run looks decent. But look, Remarkey's well-found in the market, dropping in grade. I think she'll win. But she's probably not going to be everyone's bet at even money. But I think she's the most likely winner. So I think people need to make up their own mind whether they're happy to take the evens or not. I certainly think she probably has the best chance of winning. One that I wouldn't put anyone off at a big price is the Ragged Afield, born to rock at 40s. I just think she's interesting. She won on debut at Yarmouth and then was sent off 6-4 favourite for the Dragon Stakes at Sandown, that was won by Killian, and just wasn't seen since July. And then, look, had a fair run at Newmarket last time out, beating 4.5 lengths behind Pretty Crystal and Nell Gwynn. And, you know, I think she's unexposed. And look, the stable obviously taught a lot of her last year. I just wouldn't put anyone off taking a swing, a small each way at a big price, given the makeup of the race with a short price favourite and only 9 runners. So, yeah, look, bit of a cop-out, PK. 2 darts. I think Remarkey will win. I'd probably... as a bookie, I'd like to keep her on side at evens, but I couldn't put anyone off a big each way of Born to Rock.
That will cop it. I didn't offer you 2. You could have 2 in the Victoria Cup. You didn't even give us 1. Right, let's go back to Rory. Your thoughts on the Group 3?
I quite like Great Generation here from Stall 9. Historically, you do want to be drawn high on the turf track at Lingfield. They've been desperately trying to offset that for years now, and they've managed to do it to some degree, but you'd still rather be high and close to that rail than low and off it. And Great Generation won her first 2. She ran a cracker when second in the Firth of Clyde Stakes, and then she improved again when fourth to Romantic Style in the Prix Imprudence last time out. That form looks very good now. The runner-up was Ramatuel, who arguably should have won the Guineas if Aurelien Lemaitre hadn't gone for home so soon. And a third out day was Tam Fana, who arguably should have won the Guineas if Jimmy Spencer hadn't covered every blade of grass at Newmarket. So given how well those two shaped at Newmarket, I'd say the Great Generation, who was just 2 lengths behind them, would have a very big chance here. So I'm happy to be with her. I'm happy to be with her. I do have to dig out some more Gredley family horses, though.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't prove my point well enough, did I? Ambiente Friendly, we mentioned. Use Uario Amigo is one I was trying to think of for the run on Monday night. You've also got User Amistoso. You've got Ambiente Amigo. You've got Climate Action for Environment Friend fans. Environment Amigo coming in there as well. You know, there used to be 1 or 2 named like that. Now it's just find very slightly different ways of saying user friendly and environment friend. But I quite like it. I was a big fan of both of those horses. So it's nice to be reminded.
User friendly in particular, obviously, was a cracking animal for that for those connections. The Gredley colours, you'll know them: the yellow with the black stripes and the white cap. Okay, hey Doc, we've got a jumps race to cover. It is the Swinton.
This won't take long, will it?
Ooh, okay, all right, okay. This won't take long, he says. I'm looking at the runners and trying to think of what is the type of horse he'll tip up. Well, there's a few Irish raiders, and Joseph O'Brien's Lark in the Morning has certainly caught the eye of punters and traders alike. 2-1 favourite for the Swinton. Affidil for Paul Nichols and Freddie Gingell. I always muck that up. 7-1. 10-1 Belie for the Johnson White team. Harry Fry's got Jin Coco. Tin, Fergal O'Brien and Johnny Burke. New partnership, of course. 12-1 Rare Middleton. I'm sure there'll be an extra place. There's nothing here that stands out as a type of horse that you always tip up here. I'm trying to, unless no,
you're looking for a type of horse rather than a stone bunking, certainly. That's what
they're doing, so. Right, you have the floor. You have the floor. Off you go.
The favourite is 2-1 and should probably be about a shade of odds on, shouldn't it? But what we've been told about Lark in the morning all year is it wants quick ground. And they decided to get to let him take his chance at Cheltenham on ground that was very nearly heavy for the Fred Winter, which he won in really good style. Interestingly, he was pulled at Punchestown on ground that was sort of yielding to soft on the penultimate day of the meeting there. So clearly, they're taking it seriously. They want to give him a try on quick ground. His best flat form was on fast. He was actually an impressive barrier trial winner of Dundalk, I think, as a juvenile, and has always looked like he's got loads of gears. There is no better track in the world for a fast horse and it will be fast ground at Haydock. It'll be really fast, and you're looking at a trip short of 2 miles as well. So it's a real test of speed there. Everything about Lark in the morning suggests that would bring out the best in him. I stopped the second I saw his name, and I've tried to get a couple of firms have gone 5-2. I've tried to get a bit on at those prices because I don't think that's going to last. I think he started about 6-5, maybe 5-4. I'd much rather be typing a horse, putting a horse up at 12-1. He was going to start at 3-1 or 4-1, but I think he starts very short for this, and I expect, unless they somehow produce false ground, or unless Haydock with its unique atmospheric conditions produces rain, then I'd expect him to have ideal conditions for the first time in his life over hurdles, and he's liable to improve a fair bit in what he's shown so far, and what he's shown so far gives him a big chance of winning anyway.
Joe, beat that. A stone bonking certainty.
Yeah, I kind of agree with him, PK, to be honest. We had a big fight in the trading room yesterday about his price. We went, I think we were 9-4 and we were laying it, and we went 15-8 and we were laying it, and then we went 6-4, and then a few were protesting that at 6-4 was a ridiculous price, and we ended up going back out 2-1. So I probably side with Rory here, saying that he's probably still a bit of value at 2-1. Look, Rory's kind of covered him well, and he's had kind of soft or heavy ground all season. I presume that's why he drifted so much on the day in the Boodles. He was like kind of 7-2, 4-1, and drifted out to 9-1 SP. But I don't think we're going to get a similar drift here. This is like the ground that they've basically said all season that he's looking for, isn't it? And he's rated 130 and only carrying 10 stone 12 because of the 4-year-old allowance. Just think he looks very tough to beat. Look, like Roy said, non-runner, and they've brought him here. Look, yeah, 45 grand to the winner. Just don't think they're going to leave it behind. I think if Slevin's had a lot of big rides this season and he's delivered, I think all he needs to do here is just keep Lark in the morning out of trouble, and I think he's just going to win.
Massive week for Sean Mulryan, who obviously had Gallop in the Shop last week. We're recording before day two at Chester. Perhaps his Richard Hughes-trained horse, which you tipped yesterday, Rory, what was that called? Oh, God. In the D Stakes, or was it in the... Was it in D Stakes?
It is, yeah.
Ah, fucking forget it anyway. You know, probably
we can. Yeah, yes. I can't remember the names of horses anymore. Don't ask me what one out of the guineas. I can tell you what colours they ran in. And I've just finished writing the reports. So
Big week for Sean.
Bracken's laugh, isn't it?
Bracken. What's that? Yes, indeed.
Bracken's laugh. Yeah, Bracken, that's the one. Well, Lark in the morning for Joseph Ryan, JJ Slevin. That is, you've hidden that little gem there, lads. I actually nearly forgot to put the Swinton on the running order.
Well, that's why I wanted to mention it before the last race.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what, if you've got time in your hands, and I know you don't, if you want to go down a rabbit hole, Google Bracken's laugh.
Okay. All right.
It's not what you'd expect.
Is it as interesting as a thesis kebab shop in New Ross County, Wexford.
It's probably slightly more. It's the kind of thing that will make you want to read it, and then you find you've been reading about it for an hour, and you're thinking, it's a massive waste of my time. But it sort of drags you in there.
Rabbit holes.
It's an unusual name for a Mulryan horse.
Okay, very keen on Lark in the morning. Interesting debates going on in the trading room. That's all the ITV action covered. It's a really busy weekend of racing. There's a fantastic card, Leopardstown, on Sunday. Don't forget, including the what used to be known as the Derrinstown Derby Trial. A couple of group races as well for fillies and colts as well. Watch out for that on Sunday. And also on Sunday, it might pass you by, but the French Guineas at Longchamp, or Paris Longchamp to give it its full title, will be taking place. Ryan Moore goes over there. Plenty of Irish and UK interest, as you would expect. And I just threw it down as a possibility that one of you might have a look. And Joe, you have an eye on a few of these in the Poulain, which is the 2,000 guineas, right? There's a big field, actually. Aidan has got, what has he got? He's got Diego Velasquez, Henry Longfellow, and that's it for him. The Goslins have got Orna, But is it a home winner for you, Joe?
Yeah, I think the French are going to win this again, PK. They did really well last year. I suppose they kind of, not last year, but kind of the 3 years prior to that, I think there was a bit of a reputation that English and Irish horses go over to France for a bit of a soft touch. But last year, the French did really well defending their races. And I think Christopher Head's going to win this with Ramadan. Again, the race is revolving around Aidan's runners. Henry Longfellow is going to be favourite. They actually said, you know, in the stable tours and stuff, that Unquestionable was going to be a French Guineas horse as well, but he doesn't show up here, which is interesting. Diego Vlas says, again, is probably a horse that I think maybe would want to, you know, up and trip and won't be suited by the style of the French racing. But look, Ramadan, look, is really interesting. Christopher Head is, look, absolutely bombing. He's only had 2 weeks or two winners the last 14 days, but like Rory mentioned earlier, he probably should have won the English 1000. And his horses are running really well. If they are beaten, they're not far away. But yeah, look, he's campaigned interesting as a two-year-old, kind of made his debut late in the season in September, and then was fourth in that race that we kind of mentioned when we were covering the Linkfield Derby trial, where Illinois was third and Los Angeles won. Ramadan was fourth that day, and Bracken's Laugh was actually fifth. So look, that form could be waiting for a boost on Saturday racing ahead of this. But look, Ramadan's come out this season and he's won a listed race at Saint-Cloud really impressively, although he was odds on, but he came out and backed it up in a group three at Longchamp, beating Beauvatier by just under a length. He looks like a horse that's improving with racing. This, like I said, the stable are bombing. And yeah, again, Henry Longfellow's probably a horse I'd be keen enough to take on for maidens. And Ramadan should be about 5-1. I think that's fair.
Okay, lovely. Ramadan, one to watch out for in the 2,000 guineas, the French 2,000 guineas, the Poule d'Essai de Poulain at 3:30, Longchamp, Paris Longchamp on Sunday. The race before that is their version of the 1,000 guineas, the Poule d'Essai de Pouliche. And best luck to William McCreary. He's got Vespertilio in the race. Also, you've got Brian Meehan with Kathmandu. Marco Botti's got Falgaria, who the lads tipped up to win at Newbury, Bracken Philly. And Aidan O'Brien's got Content in that race as well. George Bowie's got Sheik Colombian. So always a good card on Sunday. One to watch out for on Sky Sports Racing. It's naps time. And I think I know who Rory DeLargy's going to nap. So I'm going to hold fire on that and give Joe the floor. Dark in the morning, please.
Yeah, I'll go for a different one just because I think Lark in the morning just wins. But I'm going to nap Defiance in the Linkfield Derby trial, the 3:00. Look, we actually both went for him in that race. So, look, again, Illinois is one that I'd be keen enough to take on. I think he ran really well last time out at Epsom when not suited by the races, how the races ran, and look, really impressive form over a mile as a two-year-old for a Camelot. I think he should improve. And yeah, from stall five, I think he'd take a lot of beating here.
Defiance, who do you fancy as your nap this weekend, Rory?
I'll keep it reasonably simple for you and go for Lark in the morning.
Ooh, I didn't actually think you'd not that. I didn't think you were that buoyant about him. Okay. Stone bonking certainty. Those are the words you used, not to reiterate that. Okay. Lark in the morning in the Swinton, due off at 3:15 Haydock on Saturday afternoon. And it was the first time I looked at the race, lads. So, and I saw 2-1 favorite for the Swinton. Lad, that's a bit short, isn't that? Shit? There's got to be value here. But anyway, there you go. That shows you what I know. Right, a fabulous Saturday of racing. We've also got that brilliant card at Longchamp. Don't forget Leopardstown on Sunday as well. And day one of Killarney's May meeting, which kicks off with, there's a nice mare's novice on the card. And then you've got racing Monday and Tuesday night. And if you're going, you may even see Joe Logue. Are you going Monday, Tuesday?
Tuesday, I think, for the flat. I would like to go to Sunday, but I'm working. So, Tuesday, if I can make it.
Working from home. Sure, you could work from the track, couldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know how to get away with that now, would I?
Bring the laptop. Use the press room. Use the press room. Bring the laptop. You'd be grand. No one would bat an eyelid. Listen, lads, have a great weekend. Rory, kids, shuttling to and from various activities at the plan, as per usual?
Something along those lines, yes.
Something along those lines. Very good. Well, best luck to Charlie and whatever endeavours he is getting up to.
I will pass on your regards.
Thank you very much. Joe, we know you're Dawson. You're working Sunday and Saturday, are you?
I'm working every weekend, PK, until I go on holidays in mid-June.
Oh, my word.
It's very busy. Plenty of racing on. And yeah, so I was off last weekend and then I'm working for the next six.
That's horrible. Oh, 6 weekends in a row. What's our trade union again? Is it Impact? Is that the one?
I don't know. Pass on their number, will you?
I always found it funny that Impact was the trade union for the transport drivers in Ireland. I mean, come on. Like, you know, like Impact, Drivers, bus drivers, train drivers, is that something you want? Anyway, listen, lads, have a great weekend. It's been a great week, Rory. Thanks a million for your company for the entire week. Do check out, if you haven't listened to it or watched it, the Eurovision preview on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. It was great fun with Frank Hickey and Stephen Cass. I hope you enjoyed the week. Next week, my God, the Dante meeting's next week, isn't it? That means more podcasts. All right, okay. We'll probably be coming down to your ears again plenty next week. Haven't figured it out yet because producer Mark is on a stag. But we'll figure it out next week. Have a great weekend, all.